Hey folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. It's Michael Shelley here. John Buck Wilkin has passed away. He was around Nashville since he was a little kid. His mom was a famous songwriter. You'll hear about this in our chat. And so he was sort of in show business from a very young age. He appeared with Brenda Lee when they were both kids on stage and started making hit records as a teenager. And then later on, he made a couple of very interesting solo records. I don't think they were hits at all. In 1970, he put out In Search of Food, Clothing, Shelter, and Sex, which is a super interesting album. I really like that one. Check it out. Check out the Ronnie and the Daytonas records. They're pretty interesting. I do want to let you know that this interview is from November of 2007, the very earliest of my interviews, and also some of the earliest of the WFMU archives. All of our stuff has been archived since around 2001, 2002 on WFMU.org, and you can find my archives at WFMU.org/Michael, but the very earliest ones like these are archived in real audio format, which is just doesn't sound that good. We've obviously come a long way since then in terms of how to store digital audio. Now it sounds great, but this one just sounds a little bit bad. I cleaned it up, but I'm just warning you, it's not you, it's me. That's why this sounds bad. So John Wilkin, he was a sweet, humble guy. This interview is not that long, I think partly because his answers were very short. Sometimes he almost seemed embarrassed, I think, to be asked some of these questions. But he was around Nashville, you know, worked in publishing and administered his mom's stuff and his stuff. I think he was active and had, you know, part of the Nashville scene until the end. So he passed away April 6, 2024. He was 77 years old. I don't know what the cause of death was. And he was interesting. So I hope you enjoy this. Again, it's from 2007. It's me and John Wilkin. I love that. Ronnie and the Daytonas there in Teenage Years. That wraps up a nice long set of Ronnie and the Daytonas music. And joining us on the telephone, John Bucky Wilkin. Welcome to WFMU. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. I mean, we just heard a bunch of incredible music. Usually I start with, tell me about, you know, where you first heard about music. But I assume there was lots of music growing up in your house. Your mom was a songwriter. She wrote Long Black Veil, Cut Across Shorty, lots of stuff like that. So was there just always music from the moment you were born?
Yeah, pretty much. I used to lay under the baby grands, like when I was a baby, and soak up the vibes, you know.
Hmm.
She always played, and there was plenty of music in the house, and we moved to Nashville from Tulsa. She was like a songwriter. I mean, a school teacher who wanted to be a songwriter, and moved to Nashville, and she made it. And so, you know, that's it.
Yeah. Long Black Veil, I think it was first cut in 1958. You must have been a young teenager then. Did your family's life just kind of go upside down at that point?
Not really. We just, you know, my stepfather was working at a regular job, and I was just probably in, I don't know, maybe junior high or eighth grade. Actually, I was probably younger than that. But no, we just kind of went from Buick to Oldsmobile to Cadillac in about 20 years.
Yeah, so you just traded up a little bit. Did you study music? Did you take lessons, or was it just in the air?
You know, I tried taking piano when I was 5. I tried taking guitar when I was 8, and I just gave it up and played by ear. And finally, when I went to college, I took English. And so, you know, it's all just, you know, naive stuff with me.
Yeah. Ronnie and the Daytonas, it's a kind of an interesting story because it's not just like four guys in a garage. It's a little different than that. Tell me how you started writing songs and making records.
Well, my mother had been in the studio as a backup singer for, you know, like extra money on the side and stuff. And so we had friends. The real story of she had written for Cedarwood and wanted to start her own company. And I'd kind of toyed around with, you know, like a classical guitar playing folk music early on, and then switched to rock and roll for playing like in roller rinks with a little band to earn extra money to pay my car insurance. And she met Bill Justice through Nick Vinay, who'd been coming down here to do sessions in Nashville, and they started a publishing company, and she said, well, do you want to write some things? And Bill Justice said, well, do you want to record for me? And I said, yeah, sure. And, you know, we had one or two things out on Mala, which was like Bell Records. And,
right.
And then he said, well, write something cool. So, you know, make up a group name. And so it was pretty much a put-together thing. It was like I paid no dues before I had a hit. He got the best studio musicians, and we just did it. And then there were, like, different road guys all along and different studio guys all along.
So was Little GTO, tell me, did you write it sitting in your kitchen? What was the...
I wrote it in honors physics class in high school, my senior year, and it was from an article I'd read in Car and Driver magazine reviewing the GTO, and it had just come out in 64. And so that's the official version, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And was surf music a craze in Nashville, or was it just something you personally were into, or where did the sound, sort of that sound, come to you?
It was just the Beach Boys were happening big time already by then, and they had been for actually a couple of years, so they were like the favorite thing. And plus, I sort of grew up in the Chuck Berry school of rock and roll, and you know, their addition to it was just, you know, just sing about something hip that you loved, and that's it.
Hmm. And so did you just say, okay, Bill Justice, you know, famous, well-known session musician, you say, okay, I've got this song, you play it, run it down on acoustic guitar, and he said, okay, well, I'll just call in some session guys and we'll cut it?
That's it.
And how long did it take to make that single?
I don't know. I think we did three or four songs in about 3 hours, you know, the normal session length. And he had a connection with a guy named Larry Utah at Bell Records in New York. Are you in Manhattan?
We're just across the river in Jersey City.
Jersey City, okay, yeah. So, it was all done through New York, and it was a small label, and they had some really cool acts, you know, at the time. They had Mitch Ryder, and they had a bunch of, maybe six or eight people in the office, but they just promoted the heck out of anything that they believed in. And so, you know, they made it a hit.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those songs that endures. There are other songs that were, you know, just as big a hit that for some reason don't get anthologized or included on soundtracks, things like that. Why do you think that song is such an enduring song?
That's a deep question. I've asked myself that, you know, and you go to karma and you go to whatever, just being available or being in the business or not having any better luck, you know, it's something else. You know, because a lot of people get out of show business or whatever you call it. And I don't know, it just got reborn in the 80s with, it seems that the oldies seem to recycle after about 20 years. And if you're lucky enough to get recycled, then... you know, I mean, we went out touring. Actually, when you said you interviewed Gary Lewis, I went out touring with him in the late 80s on like a oldies, I call it like a refried, you know, artist, you know, tour.
Yeah, Gary told us that he was running a music store, you know, selling instruments and stuff, and then somebody called him in the 80s and said, listen, how'd you like to put, you know, a band together? And it was kind of a surprise to him that people were interested. You know, it was just the cycle had turned again, you know?
Yeah, we were out for like a couple of years on and off with Great American 60s Cruise, and Alex Chilton was on that
right
tour.
Yeah, so there's some real interesting guys who sort of come through, you know, since there was no band really running the Daytonas, a lot of different guys could sort of come in and lend their talents a little at a time, and some real interesting guys you cross paths with, and I'm thinking about Buzz Kaysen and Bobby Russell and Bergen White. Tell me about those guys, all real interesting guys.
They all each have big stories.
Yeah.
At the time, they were sort of doing these knockoff copy hits at a company called Spar Records, and it was like there were sound-alike versions of the hits that were eventually outlawed, but they learned their studio chops and all that stuff back then, and And so they came in on the Sandy album, on the second album, excuse me, Toy Boat. And Buzz and I co-wrote several songs, and we're still friends today. Bobby passed away, and he and Bobby did great works together. I'm sure you're familiar with Bobby Russell.
Yeah, incredible songwriter. Just lately I've been really finding some gems by that guy. Just too bad he passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
And Berg and White end up arranging a lot still, probably. Is he still working in Nashville arranging?
Yeah, he is. I mean, he does a lot of stuff, a lot of TV stuff, and anytime they need an orchestra or something, he's probably one of the, I don't know, top half a dozen people that they go to for that.
So, 64, 65, did the band go out on tour? And if so, who was the band?
Well, it changed. You know, it's like I compare keeping a band together like running a restaurant. You know, you never know who's going to be available. Somebody's always going to be, weird or crazy on you. And so it's just like we had different guys. We did some USO tours, and there was one set of guys, and there was like a different, probably like 30 or 40 different Daytonas over the years. Whoever was available was the best. The studio guys didn't want to go on the road, and the road guys were usually not good enough to play in the studio. And if you took the studio guys, then you had to fly them and pay them first class, and you'd end up losing money on the gig. So it was just, we didn't do a lot of touring, basically.
Tell me about Sandy, the second record recorded in Munich, Germany. Is that right?
The album was, single was recorded in the back of Toonville Music, which was Bill Justice's company on 2-2-track Ampexes. Hmm. And then we went to Munich to do I was on a USO tour over there, and he said, well, they want an album, I'll come over there and we'll do it. Because the string players were about a third of the price, you could get the Munich Philharmonic all day for what you could get the Nashville players at union rates, you know. So he came over there and he arranged and produced that album in Munich.
How strange. I mean, I don't think there were too many big 60s records, surf records recorded in Munich.
No, we had some fun, I tell you.
You're still a teenager, really, at this time, aren't you? I mean, was your mind blowing, or was it just, did you think this is normal?
It took a while to adjust, for sure, you know, because I was just kind of a nerd in high school and not famous at all. I mean, I hung around with a few showbiz people with my mom, but personally, yeah, it took a while to adjust, and most of the change I noticed was in other people's opinion of me, rather than in my actually changing to some, you know, rock idiot, ogre, you know what I mean?
Just overnight people treated you different when you hadn't changed.
Yeah, and then you have to learn how to deal with their reaction to your shift in fame or whatever. So, but that's a common, you know, rock and roll kind of story.
Yeah, and some folks deal with it great, and some get, you know, bowled over by it. You end up switching to RCA Records and put out some records that charted. And at this point now, I read that it says this in the liner notes of the Sundazed collection that's out, that there was a band that nobody from the Daytonas, not even you, was in the Daytonas. They would just send out a band called Ronnie the Daytonas, but it was just a bunch of guys.
Yeah, I had this booker out of Memphis. And I was trying to go to school. Actually, I went to school at NYU for one semester. And he said, look, you know, you're going to school when it's prime booking time. And I said, well, just send a band out of Memphis and call them the Daytonas and make sure they sound good. And then you can book me on the East Coast when I'm available. And they went out and they were horrible. And that arrangement didn't last very long. But I was very young at the time. I was 19 and trying to make my own decisions, and so it was not a good one.
That's kind of interesting. Let's talk about this motion picture called The Last Movie, a Dennis Hopper movie filmed in Peru, which you appear in and do most of the music for, which I've never seen. What is the movie like?
Well, it was a follow-up to Easy Rider, and it was Dennis was under a lot of pressure, and very much into let's say substances at the time.
Okay.
And so the movie is kind of, it was like a big party basically in Peru that never quite got to. It was in release for 2 weeks on Universal and then pulled because he was adamant about editing it his way and they wanted to do it their way. And so basically it was fun. It was kind of like a travelogue on acid, you know, if you will.
And how did Dennis find you, or how did you find him?
I was running around with Christofferson in LA one day because he was writing for my mom at Buckhorn, and he said, "You want to meet Dennis?" And I said, "Yes, please." And I played him a song, and he said, "You want to go to Peru with us in a couple of weeks?" And I said, "Yes, please." You know, it was a memorable. I'll remind me, and I'll send you a copy of it.
That's, yeah, I would love to see that. Great. We're talking to John Wilkin from Ronnie Daytona's. So in between that time and this sort of resurgence in the 80s that we talked about, what were you doing mostly?
I kind of dropped out and quit playing music, did odd jobs. I went to college for 5 years, and then by that time I fell in love, got my heart broke again, and the oldies came back, you know. So, you know, over, that's, you know, that filled up about 12 years, I guess.
Sure. On the Sundays label, there's this great compilation, The Best of the Malley Years, Ronnie Daytona's. When they put together something like that, do they consult you about it?
Yeah, they were nice enough to, because the guy, Bob Irwin, had been like kind of a fan that had corresponded with me, and when one of his friends finally got in at Arista and the Oldies division that had the authority to make the deal with him, it was like, you know, it was go, and you know, so yeah, I mean, it was. He was very elegant about interviewing me and making sure that all the facts were just perfect. And Sundays is a nice label.
Yeah, they put out a lot of great stuff, and they always make some effort to find the best available tapes, you know, for the record.
Yeah.
And you're still writing records songs today, and there's some free MP3s up on Bucky3.com. And are you playing out much?
No, I do the occasional benefit and, you know, do oldies if somebody asks me to. And I've been trying to crank up for that. My mom passed away a year ago and left me with a lot of things to deal with of hers. And, you know, she co-wrote One Day at a Time, and that's, you know, that gospel.
Right, it's one of the most covered gospel songs ever.
Yeah. And so it's in the catalog of things that she left me, and I'm dealing with that. And you know, I've got a little studio at home, and I work on things and hope somebody discovers me on the internet, maybe works it up and covers something. But GTO was in the movie RV last year. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I watched the clip of it on YouTube. It's a really well placed part of the movie.
Yeah, it was fun. It was actually in there three times, you know, so last year was a good year, you know, and I don't even know any of those people that did it. I sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah, well, it's a great song, and it's certainly, you know, a perfect road movie song. So you still held on to your publishing, I guess. That answers that question.
Well, no, actually, I sold it to Warner Music about 3 years ago, but they do movies right, so, you know, it's like they got it. They did it for me.
Yeah, great. Well, John Wilkin, a pleasure to speak with you. The story of Ronnie Daytona's is very interesting, and like I said, folks can get those free MP3s at Bucky3.com.
Yeah, and that'll link to the Ronnie Daytona's site and to another personal site I've got. And appreciate it. Yeah, I'll try to answer emails or whatever anybody wants to.
On that Ronnie and the Daytona site, there's a sort of a site that explains a little bit about the history of the band and where all the guys are now, which is kind of an interesting read.
Right, and Then there's the BuckWilkin.com, which has some other tracks on it too. You can download or stream and yeah.
Yeah.
Great talking to you. I love your station, man. It's like eclectic. It's
Yeah, it's all over the map for sure.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. I love it too. I'm gonna play little GTO now. Is there anything else I need to know about this song or this recording?
No, just thank you, sir.
A pleasure. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, John.
Okay, bye-bye.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her tacking up now. Listen to her whine. Yeah, yeah. Come on and turn it on, wind it up, blow it out, GTO. See her on a road course or a quarter mile. This little modified Peloton has got plenty of style. She beats the gassers and the rail jobs. Really drive them wide. Yeah, yeah. Come on and turn it on, wind it up, blow it out, GTO. Yeah. Save all my money and buy a GTO.
Turning it on,
get a helmet and a roll bar, and I'll be ready to go. Take it out to Pomona and let them know, yeah, yeah, that I'm the coolest thing around. Little buddy gonna shut you down. But when I turn it on, wind it up, blow it out, GTO. I love you, baby, and want you here with me, so I can kiss you right now and show you somehow that my love is strong. Baby, say no. Tell me to go. Don't let me tell you what to do. Baby, say no. Tell me to go. Sunday shoes, pick up the daily news, and it looks like tomorrow's blues, but it's better than none. Call on the telephone, knowing that she's not home, and put on the Rolling Stones, and I can have me some fun. Start up a flight of stairs, stand up and comb your hair. Try not to change things more than you can withstand. Get into something new, stay for a year or two, and pick up the pieces where you think they might land. Every day goes, another day's gone. Hate to say so, but I'm getting older day by take off all your clothes, stand up and wipe your nose, cry for your daddy you lost so long ago. Jump on another plane, today it's all the same, and you can chase me to Boston, girl, 'cause that's how it goes. I'm here in apartment 21, stop by and have some fun. Say, how you doing, you old son of a gun? Look in the photograph, boy, don't it make you laugh? All those changes, and what have we done? So I'll sing la 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 la. Sit down and write a song. Wait till the days grow long, and wait for the autumn wind to blow me